afternoon, everyone. The Labor, Industry, and Veterans and Military Affairs, Finance, and Policy Committee will come to order. I would like to announce that this meeting will take place in accordance with House Rule 10.01. This meeting may be viewed on House Public Information TV, which is available on the House website. As is custom for this committee, please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance. Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Ms. Doe, will you please take the roll?
Chair Eklund?
Present.
Vice Chair Zhang?
Present.
Representative Detmer? Representative McDonald?
Present.
Representative Berg?
Present.
Representative Bliss?
Present.
Representative Edelson?
Present.
Representative Frederick?
Present.
Representative Greenman?
Present.
Representative Nelson?
Present.
Representative Poston?
Present.
Representative Raleigh?
Raleigh, present.
Representative Sundin. Representative Detmer. Representative Sundin. And we do have a quorum.
Thank you, Ms. Doyle. A quorum is present. Next on the agenda is approval of minutes from the March 3rd, 2021 meeting. Every member should have received a copy of today's minutes in their inbox. Representative Poston, did you get a chance to review the minutes?
Mr. Chair, I did, and I would like to move those minutes.
Representative Poston moves the minutes from March 3rd, 2021. Any additions or corrections? Seeing no comments, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed say nay. The minutes are adopted. First bill on the agenda is House File 1203 from Representative Wolgamott. I will move that House File 1203 be referred to the General Register. Representative Wolgamott, please present your bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. I'm here today to present House File 1203, which is a bill to expand the COVID-19 workers' compensation presumption for Minnesota's public safety, healthcare, and childcare workers from May 1st, 2021 to May 1st, 2022. A little background on this bill, Mr. Chair and members, as I'm sure many of you remember, one of the first significant bills that was passed by the House and Senate in 2020 after the coronavirus pandemic hit and the legislature moved into remote operations was my bill to create a presumption that if people in the following positions contract COVID-19, that they did so in the course of their employment and are thus eligible for workers' compensation. Firefighters, peace and police officers, paramedics, EMTs, healthcare providers, nurses or assistive employees in a healthcare, home care, or long-term care setting who works with COVID-19 patients, nurses, healthcare workers, corrections officers, or security counselors at our correctional facilities, and childcare providers required to provide childcare for the children of first responders and healthcare workers under the governor's executive orders. Again, the bill, with this presumption, these first responders are not required to make the nearly impossible showing that they actually contracted the virus from someone that they encountered while working. And Mr. Chair, I want to thank the members of this committee who voted for this legislation back in 2020, including yourself, Chair Eklund, Vice Chair Zhang, Lead Detmer, Lead McDonald, Representative Edelson, Representative Nelson, Representative Poston, Representative Sundin, and Representative Moran. Since we passed that bill, I'm proud to report that the legislative presumption has worked as it was intended. The Department of Labor and Industry recently reported that workers filed 15,191 workers' comp claims for COVID in 2020, with about 82% of those coming from first responders in the presumption group. For this group, 86% of their claims were accepted, which is about 6,000 workers. And for the 1,245 COVID claims from the non-presumption group, only 42% of those claims were accepted. So what all these numbers add up to, Mr. Chair and members, is that if the presumption group had the same acceptance rate as other workers, Over 3,000 of Minnesota's nurses, paramedics, and other first responders would have seen their workers' comp claims denied. Mr. Chair, passing this presumption law was the right thing to do in 2020, and supporting House File 1203 is the right thing to do today for those same reasons. Paramedics, nurses, home health aides, healthcare providers in nursing homes, other first responders, police officers, firefighters, continue to serve on the front lines in the battle against this pandemic. While it's good that many of these workers have been vaccinated, they are by no means out of the woods. These workers continue to contract the virus and will continue to find it impossible to prove exactly where they got it unless we pass this bill. We need to have the backs of Minnesota's frontline workers. We need to extend the COVID-19 workers' compensation presumption through May 1st of 2022. And with that, Mr. Chair, I have a handful of testifiers here today, and I'd like to turn it over to my first testifier, Mr. Brian Peters from the Minnesota Peace and Police Officers Association.
Mr. Peters, welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. My name is Brian Peters. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Police and Peace Officers Association. We represent over 10,000 police and peace officers across the state of Minnesota. Thank you for having me today. I want to give a special thanks to Representative Wolgamott. I worked with him as well as many other legislators on this bill last year, and it was no easy task, but we overcame, and here we are today. Nobody could project that we'd still be dealing this when we created this bill almost a year ago. And we don't know where the end is in sight on this bill. And so extending this coverage will continue to protect those first-line workers. And I'm going to tell you a quick story about a first responder who I used to work with who did contract COVID-19. He contracted COVID-19 while performing life-saving CPR measures on an individual. About a week later, after providing CPR, he started feeling symptoms and then took a very big turn for the worse. He ended up on a ventilator for over a month. He's got permanent damage now to his lungs and currently is on desk duty because of that. To this day, as I'm talking to you, he would have to stop several times to catch his breath. This is the reality that first responders face every day. And the fact that we don't have a cure or an end in sight right now is why it is so important. This bill was supported bipartisan the last time, and I'm really hoping that we can come together and support this bill from a bipartisan standpoint. The men and women who put on that badge each and every night need your support and need for you to continue to protect them until, you know, hopefully soon, this is all ending. So again, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to speak today, and I'll stand for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Peters. Representative Wolgamott, I have two more testifiers. Do you have an order you want them to go in?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Now, if you would please direct it to Mr. Chris Parsons of the Minnesota Professional Firefighters.
Chris Parsons, President of Minnesota Professional Firefighters. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Chris Parsons. I'm president of the Minnesota Professional Firefighters. We represent over 2,000 firefighters, paramedics, and emergency dispatchers all throughout the state of Minnesota. And first of all, I want to represent our thank you, Representative Wolgamott, for bringing this bill forward. And thank you, everybody that supported the original COVID-19 presumption for first responders last spring. As you have heard the statistics, it has had a measurable effect, and we thank you very much for your support. The bill is overwhelmingly bipartisan, and I believe that we need to extend the sunset on the bill for another year. Let me tell you just briefly about the last year through the eyes of firefighters, paramedics, and EMTs. As a first responder, it's been the longest year in many of our lives. Because of the pandemic, we've had no sanctuary. We've had to worry about contracting COVID-19 in the field from patients at the station, from other firefighters, and then spreading it to our family and friends. Many people have the luxury in their minds of bending and breaking the COVID-19 restrictions. But for us to do the same, knowing what we have seen on a daily basis, multiple calls, many of us have been exposed or in close contact with COVID-19 patients. That would be the epitome of irresponsibility on our parts. To delay this extension is needless, and it's adding to our angst, I can tell you. Last year, much was said by people in the Capitol about having the backs of firefighters, EMTs, and other first responders. My colleagues and I don't have the luxury of working from home and maintaining the a 6-foot buffer when we're on calls. Our office is literally in the homes of the sick and injured, and in order for us to do our jobs properly, we have no choice but to get close to those patients. We've been fulfilling our duty over the last year of this pandemic, responding to your calls and bringing sick patients to hospital emergency departments. When a COVID-19 patient is in cardiac arrest in the field, I can tell you there's no such thing as social distancing. In the U.S., COVID-19 is the leading cause of death among firefighters and EMS workers since the start of the pandemic. Think about that. Firefighters and EMS workers have been receiving the various vaccines, and we expect that the rate of illness and death will ebb. But this is no time to let our guard down. This pandemic is not over, so please support House File 1203 and the EMTs, first responders, by extending the sunset of the presumption for COVID-19. And thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Parsons. And please extend my thanks to your firefighters. They showed up at the place I'm staying here a couple weeks ago when water line burst, and I was very impressed with their professionalism. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Next on the agenda is Brian Rice. Mr. Rice, would you please identify yourself for the record and proceed?
Thank you, Chair Ackland. Brian Rice, I'm here today on behalf of Minnesota Professional Firefighters, and also AFSCME Council 5. AFSCME Council 5 has 43,000 employees, but as far as this bill is concerned, we have correction officers, jailers, and child care providers provide child care for essential employees. You know, last year, just about this time, we put together this coalition of police, fire, correction officers, nurses, hospital employees, nursing home employees, EMS, and we didn't know what we were fighting, but what a war that it's been, and that war simply isn't over. And the bill before you extends by 1 year until May 1 of 2020, this presumption for these essential workers, and that May 1st date is looming large of this year. If, without legislative action in the next 6 weeks, these people who the legislature had their back for last year will not be there. And while it looks good, and we'd all like to claim victory and say this is over, it's not. I mean, we have variants from Brazil, London, South Africa. Who knows? Maybe we're going to get a Carver County variant that's going to find its way around masks and vaccine and everything like that. And last year, this legislature, or that legislature, did the absolute right thing. It was the second state in the country to make this a legislative presumption. There was some talk about having the executive do it, and then we would get into the fight about an executive order. No, the legislature stepped up and said, this is a pandemic. We have not seen something like this since World War I and with the Spanish flu, and it's just so essential to do it. Vaccines are permeating, and hopefully that will cure it. If everyone's vaccinated and these public employees are essential workers are getting them, that means this presumption is not going to cost much. Hopefully the vaccine works, but the challenge is it might not work. And the bigger challenge, I would submit, Chair Ackland and members of the committee, is this. You don't want to go to work doing your job with even the smallest amount of doubt in your mind that, will I get sick today? Will I not be covered? How bad is this? As Mr. Peters testified, the officer who performed CPR, you in these jobs that you're asking these people to do, there can't be this hesitation. And for the life of me, a year ago at this time, they were saying this is going to cost hundreds of millions of dollars. That didn't happen. We didn't know. I sat on a task force. If there's a cost to it, It's a price worth paying. Every indication that we've seen from the Department of Labor and Industry and Mr. Zaman's office is that it isn't as bad cost-wise as we thought. But if you're going to ask these people to fight the war, members of the legislature, you got to arm them. You've got to provide them this level of security. And we sure hope you can get this done in the next several weeks, because the clock to May 1st is ticking. With that, I'll be here to answer any questions. And thank you for your time, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Rice. May I'm asking all three testifiers to please stick around in case there's any member questions. Representative Wolgamott, is that it for your testifiers? Okay, we'll go to members' questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That concludes our presentation, and we're open for questions.
Thank you, Representative Wolgamott. Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a question for Representative Wolgamott as to, I think this is the second bill now that we've heard that you brought forward without having the WCAC, Workman's Comp Association Committee, give their input on it. My understanding, they're going to be talking about this issue very soon. Just curious as to why you decided to circumvent that group that has employees and employers and people that are kind of in the industry and bring to the legislature their advice, why you would circumvent that committee and bring your bill forward without their opinion.
Representative Wolgamott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dahl, I have not circumvented that committee. In fact, I've been there to present this bill and discuss it not once, but twice within the past month. I'm working very actively with members from that committee. In fact, I'll be back there again tomorrow. So I'm absolutely working with the WCAC. I've been there twice. We'll be there again tomorrow. But I'm here today because, well, I think you know that we have deadlines coming up and committee time is short. And I'm not just going to sit around and ask our frontline workers to put themselves at risk without doing everything I can to advance this bill through the House of Representatives and through our committees. So I'm not circumventing the WCAC process. I'm working with them, and I'm working with the legislature to make sure that we're having the backs of our frontline workers.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wolgamott, fine, thank you for that explanation, but they have not given their blessing on it. So in a way, circumventing the fact with their opinion of it. And I appreciate the fact that you're bringing this forward right away. As you know, we all supported it. I supported this last spring to help our front-end workers. We got the vaccines that are going out in droves. We have herd immunity growing. The vaccines and the cures are working. They are doing their job, thanks be to God. Certainly we know that that is happening. But I just, again, you're not really at least letting this advisory committee to give you their peace in the valley, if you will. And certainly I understand and appreciate the speed in which you want to get this through, but don't you think that it would be a good idea to get their final input before bringing this bill? I mean, I believe they're meeting possibly tomorrow. Does one day make that big a difference?
Representative Wolgamott.
As I said, I've been there twice before. I'll be there tomorrow. And yes, when we are in committees and under the pressure of deadlines, yes, we need to be as efficient and work on this as possible.
Representative McDonald.
That's all I have for now, Mr. Chair.
Representative Bliss.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wolgamott, I think I'm going to support this bill, but just out of curiosity, you said you've been to the WCAC twice. Can you tell me what the holdup is? What are their concerns? Why is there not a consensus support behind this bill right now?
Representative Wolgamott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. They had asked me to come and bring it forward on a and just present information and have the discussion. So they decided to not have a vote on that after hanging it for two meetings. And we'll be, my understanding is that there will be a vote on it tomorrow.
God bless.
Okay, and if there's going to be, I think I'm going to support it. I just want to understand why we're rushing it. I understand there's a May 1st deadline for this, and I understand we're coming to committee deadlines, but if the meeting is tomorrow, why push it? Why make us vote before we have the blessing of the WCAC?
Representative Wolgamott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Bliss, again, I don't know how many more times I can say it. I've been there twice before. I'm going back there tomorrow. We have right now, Representative Bliss, in your district, there are frontline workers who aren't sure if they're going to be covered under this workers' compensation presumption in just a few short weeks' time. I'm fighting for them. I know that you have their interests at heart. Again, with the WCAC process, with our committee deadline process, I want to do everything that I possibly can to make sure that this legislation continues to move forward in the WCAC, in the House of Representatives. I'm going to bat for the frontline workers in your district, Representative Bliss, and all throughout our state. That's why we're hearing this bill today. That's why I've been at the WCAC twice. That's why I'm going back for a third time tomorrow, is because I want to have the backs of the frontline workers in your district. And I know that you do too.
Yeah, and sorry, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wogelman, I think I started out by saying I'm going to support this bill. I do know that WCAC is a rather important committee, and that we do try to get their blessing on stuff before we bring it to committee. And I just, again, my whole point was, why haven't they? I understand they decided not to, but there has to be a reason why they didn't put it up for a vote. And that was my question. I think I'm going to support the bill. I'm concerned that we're starting a precedent of not getting their blessing when we discuss workers' compensation issues. And that's all my concern was. Again, I think I am going to support this in the end, but I just wish we would have followed the set procedures. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Bliss. And we may get some clearing up with our next representative with a question. Representative Sundin. Representative Sundin, you might be muted.
Sorry, I'll catch on someday.
So will I. Please proceed, Representative Sundin.
Yeah, I plan on supporting this bill. It was a terrific bill coming forth last year, and an extension certainly is in order, given the variant of the disease that we're dealing with here. But just to let Representative Bliss and others know that, this WCAC will probably have this finalized before this gets to the floor anyway. So it'll be fully vetted. Everyone will understand this. And just for your information, the WCAC actually moves slower than the Senate. They only meet monthly. And, this isn't the only issue that they're dealing with at their meetings, But, I think one thing that we do agree on, that there's a diminishing need for this as we go forward. But the key word is there is still a need, and we'll keep that in mind. When the original bill was passed, it was kind of in murky waters there as far as funding goes. We didn't know what the CARES money would cover when it did come through, and if it did or when it would come through. We had no idea. Is to the timing of that, but that leads me to the question of ongoing funding for this. I know we know it have more federal funds coming into the coffers, and I'm just wondering, just wonder if there are going to be secure funds going forward to the author of the bill.
Representative Wogelman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Sundin. Most governments, most of the local governments are self-insured for workers' compensation. The cities and counties and townships support this extension. The healthcare industry is paying the cost of their premiums. Initially the entire system pays for it and then rates adjust. As just mentioned last year, the Commerce Department said it would cost hundreds of millions. I've seen the cost so far be at less than 20 million, but I don't know if my testifier, Mr. Rice, would care to add more light on this, or if someone from the Department of Labor and Industry would care to chime in on this as well.
Mr. Rice.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the question of cost, I think the best experts on that are the Department of Labor and Industry. Mr. Zaman over there is knowledgeable on that. I imagine that will come up at the WCAC meeting tomorrow. I would echo what Representative Sundin said. Number one, and this goes to Representative Bliss's question, there seems to be a large consensus around this measure of Representative Wogelman. There are apparently other matters before the WCAC involving teachers and some other groups who are seeking the presumption. There might be less consensus on those matters. There may be some question of cost, and there may be some other kind of a package deal that's being worked out. But I also think that Representative Sundin is right about the pace of the WCAC. It's almost a filibuster. Each side has to agree, and they take a long time. And with all due respect to Representative McDonald's and others, the clock really is ticking on May 1st. And we hope that this matter at least can be moved, and perhaps it provides some impetus. And again, I guess I would say to the question of cost, I expect that'll come up. It came up before in the WCAC. The numbers were not overwhelming, and I hadn't heard of anyone particularly asking for specific state funding, but that's probably another matter that WCAC and Dolly could provide an answer to.
Thank you, Mr. Rice. Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I thank Mr. Rice for bringing forward his information. It's great. And I thank the author for the bill. So I'm done.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wolgamott, in regards to Mr. Rice's comments, and he's most likely probably right as far as the cost of this, because of the vaccines and the herd immunity and just things that are working. We don't know about the other strains, but I think that some are concerned about the extended date of next year. I can certainly support your bill in regards to the timely matter of it is with May approaching. So I think that's a good idea. And yes, I am not, you know, completely down on it, but the date for 2022 seems like you guys want to push everything off a whole year. What Mr. Rice said probably won't be the cost, but just wanted to know from you, why a whole year extension? Don't you think that's a little bit too far out?
Representative Wolgamott.
No, I don't. That's based on feedback I'm hearing from these frontline workers all throughout our state, from the people who are in fire departments, the people who are in police departments, the people who are in hospitals, the people who are in childcare settings. That's what I'm hearing from them. I put this bill forward with very thoughtful feedback from the people who are actually on the front lines. That's where they see that this number needs to go. We don't have a crystal ball, Representative McDonald. We don't know. We didn't a year ago. We don't now. But I know for a fact that right now that these frontline workers need to know that we have their backs through this pandemic. That's why we're extending it by a year.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'm not seeing any other comments. I have a couple before we wrap up on this bill. There's been talk about the vaccines. I'm certainly thankful that we now have three vaccines in place that'll help not only our frontline workers, obviously, they're our most critical staff in taking care of this, but also the rest of the population. We also need to take into account what's going on with these other strains that are showing up from around the world and around the country. We need to take that into account in dealing with this. And we do have an ongoing pandemic. It was just over a year ago that this started. And we need to make sure that we take care of our frontline workers, because they're the ones, when the phone rings, they're the ones that answer the call to come and take care of our homes, make sure that our sick are transported to the hospitals, and they have our backs. It's time that we have theirs. Representative Wolgamott, any further comments or any further final remarks?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members, for hearing this bill. I have two messages. First, I want to take a moment to thank all the frontline workers in Minnesota who have served us during the pandemic, who have kept us safe, who have kept our health cared for, who have cared for our children. Thank you for the physical risk that you've taken to keep our state moving forward through this pandemic. Second, I want to thank the members for listening to this bill. You know, if you're thinking about whether or not you should support this bill, you should think about whether or not you have the nerve to call the frontline workers in your district and explain to them why you're going to abandon them at this time of the pandemic. We can't do that, Mr. Chair. We can't do that, members. We need to build off the good work that we did together a year ago. We need to continue to have the backs of our frontline workers. We need to pass House File 1203. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members.
I will renew my motion that House File 1203 be referred to the General Register.
Mr. Chair?
Representative McDonald, quickly.
Yeah, sorry. I just want to state that Representative Wolgamott's impugning our character and intentions by saying we have the nerve. If we don't have the nerve to support our frontline workers, I find that offensive. Most of us who spoke on the minority said we were going to support it. I find that very offensive. I would never say that to my majority friends, saying they don't have the nerve to support our first responders. I take offense to that, and I think it's impugning our judgment and our character. And I wish that he'd retract that silly statement that we wouldn't have the nerve to support our first responders. That's an insult.
And I agree with that. I agree with that. It was an insult.
You, Representative Detmer, you've run it. Okay, calm down, folks. You've run a committee before, Representative Detmer. You know you go through the chair and it has to be acknowledged. Representative Wolgamott.
Mr. Chair, if I ever do that, you make sure you call me out on it.
Representative Wolgamott.
Speak. Yo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I meant no offense to any of the members, and that was not the intent of my remark. And
I will renew my motion that House File 1203 be referred to the General Register. Ms. Doyle, please take the roll.
Eklund.
Yes.
Eklund, aye. Vice Chair Zhang.
Aye.
Zhang, aye. Representative Detmer.
Aye.
Detmer, aye. Representative McDonald.
Aye.
McDonald, aye. Representative Berg.
Aye.
Berg, aye. Representative Bliss.
Aye.
Bliss, aye. Representative Edelson. Representative
aye.
Edelson, aye. Representative Frederick.
Aye.
Frederick, aye. Representative Greenman.
Aye.
Greenman, aye. Representative Nelson.
Aye. Nelson, aye.
Nelson, aye. Representative Poston.
Poston, aye.
Poston, aye. Representative Raleigh.
Raleigh, aye.
Raleigh, aye. Representative Sundin.
Aye.
Sundin, aye. There are 13 ayes, 0 nays.
13 ayes, 0 nays. The motion passes. You're on the way. You're on your way to the General Register, Representative Wolgamott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members.
Next bill on the agenda is House File 1526 from Representative Bliss. Representative Bliss, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I would.
Representative Bliss moves that House File 1526 be referred to the General Register. Representative Bliss, please explain your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The legislature passed a bill in 2019 designating the first Saturday in October as Veterans Suicide Awareness Day. House File 1526 builds upon those efforts by adding the word prevention to the day designation. We need not to just raise awareness, but do everything we can do as a legislature and as a society to prevent veteran suicides. On average, more than 6,000 veterans in the U.S. die of suicide each year, including more than 100 Minnesota veterans. There's a national veteran suicide crisis line for veterans in crisis. That number is 1-800-273-8255, and users also may text 838-255 or chat online to receive confidential crisis information. According to the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, the Veterans Crisis Line is the world's largest provider of crisis call, text, and chat services. It serves more than 650,000 calls every year, 24 hours a day and 7 days a week. The Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs has taken the lead in preventing suicide in Minnesota. I want to thank Commissioner Herkey for his efforts in establishing the Veteran Suicide Prevention Office in the State Department of Veteran Affairs, and I want to help ensure that the MDVA continues its efforts in preventing veteran suicide after Commissioner Herkey leaves. So this bill also requires the MDVA to coordinate veteran suicide awareness and prevention activities in conjunction with the state set aside to raise awareness of the issue. Chair Eklund, I have three testifiers to speak on the bill and talk about veteran suicide and the importance of prevention. And first one I would like to have go would be Commissioner Herkey from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs.
Commissioner Herkey, welcome back to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Eklund, and appreciate an opportunity to be in front of the committee today to testify in support of House File 1526. As indicated by Representative Bliss, we have a 100 to 120 veterans that take their lives each year in Minnesota. And suicide, as we know, is preventable. I think veteran suicide is a bit different than other suicides in that the service-related activities always play into this going forward. I believe that this bill dovetails very well with my change item that I submitted and testified on earlier as it relates to creating a modest program within the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs to be able to create not only awareness, but to really to work on those prevention issues. And again, our focus is to reduce veteran suicides by 20% by 2025 and to totally eliminate them by 2035. We as an agency have been promoting veteran suicide awareness through the first year in 2019 was an in-person event in St. Paul that we did. It was very modest. And the second year, we actually, because of COVID, did a press release and had a lot of different interviews and also were had a great Channel 4, Reg Chapman, did a story that was very good and well put together and explained to the public some of the issues related to that. So we've been sort of performing that function already and we're really looking forward to do more of that as we go forward. So in conclusion, I'd just like to say that I'm in support of House File 1526. I know the governor would support this too because he's asked me to move this process along and let's start getting some reductions in suicides. And I said that we will put together a plan and support that. So I just want the committee to understand that MDBA stands ready to do our part if this is enacted and make sure that both the prevention and awareness is there. And I think this would be helpful long-term to MDBA as they go and we work through this in the future. So thank you, Mr. Chairman, for allowing me to have time to testify in support of House File 1526.
Thank you, Commissioner Herkey. Representative Bliss, you have two more testifiers. Do you care which order they go in? You're muted, Representative Bliss.
There we go. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd ask that Elliot Butai be next. He's the Criminal Justice Coordinator for the Minnesota Chapter of the National Alliance on Mental Illness.
Mr. Butai, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Elliot Butai. I'm the Criminal Justice Coordinator at NAMI Minnesota. NAMI is the National Alliance on Mental Illness. And I just wanted to say thank you to Representative Bliss for authoring this bill and inviting me to speak today. As you've already heard, suicide disproportionately affects veterans and their families. And today we know more about treating and addressing trauma than ever before, and historically that's primarily due to the experience of combat veterans. So we owe it to them and their families to give them preventative tools for hope and wellness in the community. At NAMI, we provide hundreds of suicide prevention and postvention classes every year. We partnered with stakeholders around the state to work to prevent suicide through the Governor's Challenge with the federal VA and the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, or SAMHSA. And we also work with veterans, service members, and their families so that they can request a cable lock or a lock box in a time of crisis, and we actually provide those directly to people. And I bring up lockboxes because they're one example of proven and effective means restrictions that save lives. And I mention that because there are proven and effective methods for preventing suicides, but too often discrimination and shame can keep those tools away from the people who need them the most. So House File 1526 is a simple bill, but we think it'll have a big impact for our veterans and service members and their families. Finally, I just want to take 1 second to give another example of why this bill is so important. At NAMI, nearly 100% of our staff and board live with a mental illness, or they have a family member with a mental illness. And while I'm not a veteran myself, I do live with PTSD, and I've lived with, or you could say I've survived, suicidal thoughts and ideation. And every member at NAMI is required to take a one-hour suicide prevention class when we start, called QPR, Question, Persuade, Refer. And In just that one short hour, I discovered a tool that it sounds counterintuitive, but it's just simply to be, you know, straightforward and frank when you're talking about suicide. If you suspect that, you know, someone's struggling, it's best to just ask them straight away, you know, are you having thoughts of taking your own life? And that just helps to kind of disarm the situation, and it actually is more effective than what we think, which is maybe feeling afraid or not knowing how to talk about it. And I share that just to say that, you know, that stuck with me for almost the 2 years ago since I took that class, and I feel that that small bit of knowledge has empowered me multiple times, you know, to feel more control over my own thoughts and to know that I have just a little something more to help the people I love if they're struggling too. So I just wanted to share that as an example of the kind of practical tools that we can give our veterans and service members and their families by passing this legislation. So thank you again to Representative Bliss for bringing this bill forward, and thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Mr. Butte. Next up on the for testifiers is Eric Wittenberg, Minneapolis Veterans Administrative Suicide. Mr. Wittenberg, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Eric Wittenberg. I am the Suicide Prevention Coordinator for the Minneapolis VA Medical Center, a position I have held for 3.5 years. And I'm also an Army veteran with a deployment to Afghanistan. So this topic really hits home for me. Unfortunately, what we're seeing is that the number of those veterans who die by suicide hasn't really decreased in the past 5 to 6 years, right? With all the money and efforts and time we're putting into it, we're still seeing that roughly 20 a day. And as Commissioner Herkey talked about before, it seems that, you know, 100 to 110 veterans in Minnesota die by suicide a day, per year, but that's only the ones that we know of who identify as a veteran. What we know from national statistics is that number is probably 2 to 3 times higher than what we're actually tracking. So putting prevention into this bill is huge. Our newest tagline is suicide prevention is everyone's business. And as Mr. Butte had said, veterans are approaching death by suicide 2 times greater than their civilian counterparts. So that is a huge issue for us. Currently, we have, September 10th is National Suicide Prevention Day, but I would assume that if we asked a room full of people, not many people would know that, or they would not know that September, the VA really pushes Suicide Prevention Month. So getting that message out there, getting the word out there is going to be huge. Another issue we're facing is we know that only 6 out of the 20 veterans who die by suicide per day are getting care at the VA. And that's not even mental health care. So by sending the message out there to family and friends that the VA is available for this should help decrease those numbers. One of our biggest problems is still the stigma about suicide. People are afraid to talk about it. They're afraid to deal with it. And we need to change that. The current paradigm is that we need to wait until the person is in a severe mental health crisis before we get them help. It's personal. We're not supposed to ask about it. We're supposed to put them in the car and rush them to the hospital. However, by really focusing on prevention and awareness, we can give those skills that Mr. Butte talked to community members, to friends and family, that they can actually use to help a veteran in the places where they work, live, recreate, right? So we want to make sure that everybody is aware that suicide is still a major problem among veterans. The only way to tackle that is to really talk about it, become more aware, and really change that shift into helping those veterans who are suffering from mental illness, giving them the support and care they need before it's an immediate crisis, and they take that impulsive step to end their life. My program itself, I can say that we have on a yearly basis managed about 35 to 40 veteran suicides in our program. The emotional toll it takes not only on the family members and those involved is extremely high. It is preventable, and we need to get that message out there. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Wittenberg, for your testimony, and thank you for the work you do on behalf of our veterans. Representative Bliss, is that it for your testifiers? That's all I have on my list.
That is all I have for testifiers.
Okay, member questions or comments? Seeing no comments, I'll have a couple. I want to thank Representative Bliss for bringing this bill forward. One of the focuses when I was fortunate enough to be the named chair of the Veterans Committee last biennium and going forward into this one was veteran suicide prevention. And I think anything we can do to help protect the men and women that served our country from this terrible fate is not time wasted or money wasted. So I appreciate what you're doing with this bill, Representative Bliss. With that, Ms. Doyle, please take the roll.
Eklund?
Yes.
Eklund, aye. Vice Chair Zhang?
Yes.
Zhang, aye. Representative Detmer?
Aye.
Detmer, aye. Representative McDonald?
Aye.
McDonald, aye. Representative Berg?
Yes.
Berg, aye. Representative Bliss?
Aye.
Bliss, aye. Representative Edelson?
Aye.
Edelson, aye. Representative Frederick?
Aye.
Frederick, aye. Representative Greenman, excused. Representative Nelson?
Aye.
Nelson, aye. Representative Poston?
Aye.
Poston, aye. Representative Raleigh?
Raleigh, aye.
Raleigh, aye. Representative Sundin?
Sundin, aye.
Sundin, aye. There are 12 ayes, 0 nays.
12 ayes, 0 nays. The bill's on the way to the General Register. And Representative Bliss, I forgot to give you final comments. So even though it's on its way, if you have any final comments, you can make that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think basically, maybe if I could just take a chance to repeat the Veterans Suicide Crisis Line in case anybody's watching. It's 1-800-273-8255. And thank you for your support.
Thank you, Representative Bliss. I will now pass the gavel to Vice Chair Zhang.
All right. Thank you, Chair Eklund. Final bill on the agenda for today is House File 961 from Representative Eklund. Would you like to move your bill?
I move the House File. I make the motion that House File 961 be re-referred to the State Government Finance Committee.
And we do have a A6 author's amendment. Would you like to explain the amendment first, or should we vote on it and then you can take the bill altogether?
I will explain, Vice Chair Zhang, I will explain the amendment first. It's pretty basic. Members that were here last year, we passed an 8.4% increase for highway patrol troopers. So on lines 1.9 to 1.13, this moves that same increase to the supervisors and managerial licensed police officer positions throughout the agency, effective date retroactively to October 22nd, 2020. Section 4, this is to the basis of this bill. We are looking at forming a collective bargaining agreement or unit with representatives of law enforcement supervisors under Minnesota state statutes, section 3.855, and this will include state patrol supervisors, enforcement supervisors employed by the Department of Natural Resources. These two groups shall stay in the commissioner's plan until we get the collective bargaining unit set up. 2.3, criminal apprehension investigative supervisors and other law enforcement supervisors position currently in a general supervisor employees unit shall remain in the general supervisor's employment unit until the middle management, represented by the middle management association. And 2.6, employees in positions to be included in law enforcement supervisors unit shall be authorized to participate in any certification elections for law enforcement supervisors unit, any negotiations and collective bargaining activities of the state law enforcement supervisors unit. That, Mr. Chair, that is the amendment.
All right, and Representative Eklund moves the A6 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed? The motion carries. The amendment is adopted. Representative Eklund, your bill, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 961 as amended. The bill allows for state law enforcement supervisors to collectively bargain, which should produce a more efficient process for the employees and for MMB alike. As of now, state law enforcement supervisors are spread out over three different groups in the commissioner's plan, the managerial plan, and the middle management association. This bill does not mandate that all supervisors organize, but rather creates a bargaining group should their classification group choose to do so. This bill addresses the need for law enforcement to begin separately, to bargain separately, especially supervisors due to the state law enforcement losing ground over city and county law enforcement equivalents. This bill also allows supervisors to remain competitive within the bargaining group that represents the employees they supervise. Over the past 10 years, supervisors have lost ground and have not been afforded the same benefits as the line employees. Lastly, this bill allows for employees to take control over their future direction and have the opportunity to bargain for an equitable future. With that, Mr. Chair, I have one testifier, and Mr. Brian Peters from the Minnesota Police and Peace Officer Association is also here if members have any technical questions on the bill.
All right, Mr. Peters, to your testimony.
Mr. Chair, I don't think Brian Peters is testifying. It's
okay.
He's just here to answer.
All right, members, questions or comments for the bill?
Mr. Chair, I think it's Paul Van Voorhis is going to be testifying.
Oh, Paul. Yeah, Mr. Paul Van Voorhis, president of the State Patrol Supervisor Association.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Eklund. My name is Paul Van Voorhis. I'm the president of the Minnesota State Patrol Supervisors Association. I've been a Minnesota State Trooper for 25 years. I currently serve at the rank of lieutenant in the St. Cloud area, which encompasses Stearns, Benton, Sherburne, and Wright counties. This bill that Representative Eklund is carrying is an important bill for us and for law enforcement supervisors from other departments. I have a graphic here I'd like to show that'll give the committee a better understanding of who
All right.
we're dealing with and who in particular this bill would affect. On the very bottom of the graphic, you're going to see MLEA. That's the Minnesota Law Enforcement Association. That is the bargaining group that represents our Lion State Troopers, conservation officers, commerce agents, corrections agents who do fugitive task force, and then alcohol gambling enforcement sworn agents, if you will. Above those respective boxes are the supervisors that supervise those employees. If we work from the left to the right, you're going to see above state troopers, you're going to see lieutenants, which is the rank that I serve at, captains, and majors. Next to that is the, in green, are the DNR lieutenants. You'll see a box around the four groups. That group is currently housed in the commissioner's plan. And back in the 1980s, those groups severed from organization and they landed in the commissioner's plan. Above the DNR lieutenants in green, you have the captains and the majors who are currently housed in the managerial plan. And moving to the right, you have special agents in charge of BCA agents and special agents in charge of the commerce, corrections, and alcohol gambling are also in the middle management association. So those groups are currently organized, those supervisors. But one of the challenges as we...
Thanks for your input on the fire district bill.
Oh, continue, sir.
One of the challenges that we face as a group of law enforcement supervisors in the state is that we're very unique, and I believe that our issues are germane to law enforcement. And when we land in a union or a bargaining group, if you will, like Middle Management Association, we can be a small fish in a very large pond. And a lot of things have come out of the last 12 months, as you know, as it surrounds law enforcement, and some of those have come forward. But to Representative Eklund's points, as supervisors, we have fallen behind. And we have fallen behind in wages and fallen behind in some benefits. often because we find that organized groups such as the MLEA group, they have control over their destiny with a lot of, with true bargaining, if you will. The groups that are above them don't necessarily have bargaining. We have a process that's called meet and confer and are basically given a memo or sometimes an in-person meeting basically stating, here's what you're going to get. And I think that led to a lot of frustration amongst the members. And so this bill goes to that. This bill goes to fixing that, if you will, and allowing our members to have a little bit more control over their destiny, recognizing, of course, that the bargaining process is always a little bit of give and take. But I think having the ability to do so will go a long ways towards supporting our members as well as the DNR members, the BCA supervisors, and so forth. So one other point I wanted to make was that of those classifications that I showed you, and again, Representative Eklund hit on it, no one is being forced into this bargaining group. They have the ability to stay where they're at if they so choose, but there is a process for those classifications should they choose to do that. I know the language that Representative Eklund spells out some of that, but of course, through Bureau of Mediation Services, there is a defined process and statute that allows us to do that. And of course, lastly, making 8.4% that the troopers have received, the people that we supervise goes a long way towards our members. The last few months, while we support the troopers and we support their pay increase, as I think everyone's probably aware of on this committee, you know, law enforcement in the state has fallen behind significantly, and we appreciate committees like this and other committees who have taken it up. And I know it can be troublesome. There's a lot of problems that come up as a result of legislative increases to salary, but we certainly do appreciate it as we're moving into a very tumultuous summer with some upcoming things that are happening around the state, not only just in the metro, but also in northern Minnesota. And with that, Representative Eklund, I'd stand for questions if needed.
Thank you, Mr. Van Horst, for your presentation. Representative Poston, do you have a question for the testifier?
Mr. Chair, no, I have one for the bill author.
Go ahead.
Chair Eklund, could you just tell us what the Minnesota Police and Peace Officers Association, where they stand on this?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Representative Poston. That's I'm glad you asked that question. That's why I'm glad I asked Mr. Peters from MPPOA to stick around from the previous bills in case there were that type of question. So I would defer to Mr. Peters.
Mr. Peters.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Poston. You know, this is simply about fairness. And I, in the last 18 months in my position, have learned more about the MMB's process than I ever cared to learn about. And what someone coming in from the outside, it's apparent to me that, well, one, the 8.4% increase that the rank and file troopers received, you now have some troopers making more than their supervisors. And when we start getting into, well, why have the supervisors fallen behind? And to see a consistent pay increase that is not comparable to metro departments year after year after year, they start falling behind. And the fact that the supervisors for this group have no influence really on any market adjustments, any annual increases, they're kind of given what they're given. And, you know, obviously law enforcement is important to me, but I also think, you know, from MMB's purpose, they lump everyone together. So if you're a snowplow dryer, you'll get the same increase as a state patrol. And that is nothing disparaging against a snowplow driver. However, the jobs are different. And, you know, allowing the supervisors to come together to have some, nexus to bargain, I think is extremely important moving forward. And then the 8.4% increase gets them kind of started within this process. So the MPPOA fully supports this bill. I've been in conversations with Representative Eklund and Lieutenant Van Voorhis throughout this process, and it just makes sense to me.
Thank you, Mr. Peters. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, thank you, Representative Poston. I see next is Representative Raleigh, and a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate it very much. And this question is to the bill's author. And Chair Eklund, I'm going to continue to call you Chair Eklund, sorry. Is it standard practice to do pay increases like this via statute?
Representative Eklund?
Representative Raleigh, that's a great question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. What happened is we did this by statute in October to our troopers, and they very much deserved it. You could see what the great work that they've done around here at the Capitol and helping out on other protest events, that type of thing that's going on. But as with that, there's unintended consequences. At that time, the troopers and conservation officers were in the same bargaining unit, or they are in the same bargaining unit. Conservation officers who also come down here to the Capitol when they're called out did not get the increase. And Representative Hansen ran that amendment through the Environment Committee, and that bill is certain. I don't know where it's at in the process, but he basically the same amendment that I put on here. And so I personally, as an old a union rep, would prefer that things not be done by legislative action. But since we did it in October, this is to clean up and make sure that all of our law enforcement officials and officers are taken care of by the system.
All right, Representative Raleigh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Next question, I don't know exactly how to phrase it, Chair Eklund, but can you speak a little bit to how this will affect the right of severability?
Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Raleigh, I don't know if I can speak to that, but I'm hoping that somebody from MMB, or if they're on the call. Otherwise, I will certainly get that information to you. I don't know if anybody's here from MMB or other agency that could answer that question.
Is anybody else here? If not, could you, Representative Eklund, provide it for Representative Raleigh? Would that work, Representative Raleigh?
I'm absolutely agree to that.
Thank you.
Okay. We'll make note of that, Mr. Chair. We'll make note of that, Representative Raleigh, and make sure that we try to do our best to get that answer for you.
Thank you, Chair. I appreciate it.
Any follow-up, Representative Raleigh?
Thank you, Chair. I'm satisfied.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Detmer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Chair Eklund, for bringing this bill forward. I do have a question for Mr. Peters.
Mr. Peters?
What's going on with the collective bargaining process? Why should we as a legislature have to get involved? I know we had to get involved originally, but what's going to change now so that this will not have to be done in the legislature, that the bargaining process goes forward?
Mr. Peters?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Detmer. I think that moving forward, this is going to kind of do a reset. And to a point made earlier, right now, the rank and file members of these different organizations, the troopers, DNR, BCA, have a bargaining group that they bargain with MMB. Again, going back to the State Patrol, BCA, conservation officers, supervisors, they have no group that can bargain on their behalf. And I think it's important, especially in today's culture of law enforcement, that these supervisors have an opportunity to drive their future. Because otherwise, maybe 10 years from now, we'll be back talking about this because the supervisors' bargaining unit has continued to get those raises as every other state employee at the same rate. And, you know, as we saw last October, the Troopers Association did a very good job lobbying to get that 8.4. And now we're kind of dealing with some of the issues of that 8.4 that went just to the rank and file state troopers. So for me, this gives, the supervisors an avenue to bargain with MMB. And frankly, I don't see the legislature having to get involved in this issue again. And that's why I kind of look at this as all of a reset. I'd like to see the 8.4 go to everyone across the board to include the supervisors, but also allow the supervisors now to have some control of their future potential increases.
Thank you, Representative Detmer. Follow up.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Peters. I think that's really important because, you know, I have friends, I have ex-students of mine that are in law enforcement at the different places in law enforcement, whether it's the troopers or municipalities or counties, and there's a big discrepancy when you look at least those three areas in terms of pay. My understanding is that if they're going to be represented, they need to be represented equally. That's just my opinion. So thank you, and Mr. Chair, for bringing this bill forward.
Representative McDonald.
Yeah, thank you. See, I just want to know, just in regards to Representative Raleigh's question regarding the taking away the rights of the severability. And I know it was asked, so I'm not asking the Mr. Chairman, the author, but maybe House research or staff could answer that question as to why that would be taking away the rights of the severability.
We have House research staff here. Ms. James?
Mr. Chair, this is Martha James from House Research. When you say the severability, are you referring to Section 2 of the bill, I believe, that's striking the
Representative McDonald?
Yes, I am. Oh. Thank you.
Ms. James?
So right now, there are three groups that would be included in the new unit who have the option to sever from their unit under the current statute, and that's the general supervisory unit, and that unit is represented by MMA currently. Two of those groups did choose to sever, and so that's why they're covered by the commissioner's plan. So under this bill, they would not have that right to sever anymore from the unit that's been assigned to them under state law.
Representative McDonald?
Thank you very much. Mr. Chair, or the Representative Eklund, would that be considered a good thing? I don't know. Is that a good thing if it takes the right of state troopers and DNR officers and the right to sever or not?
Representative Eklund?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative McDonald, that will allow some of those people in a couple of those other that are already bargained or that are already bargaining under MMA, if they decide not to sever, they don't have to. It's my understanding it's giving them the option to either join the new collective bargaining unit or stay with the old one.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Eklund. So that wouldn't force unionization then, would it?
Representative Eklund.
Representative McDonald, I didn't force unionization. Is that what you said?
Correct.
Well, it would not force somebody to join a bargain. Somebody that's already under the MMA would not force them to join that bargaining unit. It would give them the option of joining the new bargaining unit, is my understanding.
Representative McDonald.
Very good. Thank
you. All right. Seeing no further questions or comments from members, Representative Eklund, any final remarks you would like to have?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Thanks for listening. I think this is an important bill. Obviously, we have one group of our supervisors that's kind of left out in no man's land when it comes to collective bargaining agreements and collective bargaining rights. So I think this is a good step forward in making sure that they're covered. And we did hear some initial discussion from the MMA folks, but I have not heard anything more about that. So once we explain what was going on, I think we have a good process going forward. So I want to thank Mr. Vanderhurst for testifying, Mr. Peters for being here to answer questions, and I ask the committee's support.
Representative Eklund, would you like to move your bill?
I will renew my motion that House File 961, as amended, be referred to State Government Finance.
Representative Eklund renews his motion that House File 961, as amended, be referred to the State Government Finance Committee. The Committee Legislative Assistant will take the role.
Chair Eklund.
Yes.
Eklund, aye. Vice Chair Zhang.
Aye.
Zhang, aye. Representative Detmer.
Detmer, aye.
Detmer, aye. Representative McDonald.
McDonald, aye.
McDonald, aye. Representative Berg.
Aye.
Berg, aye. Representative Bliss.
Aye.
Bliss, aye. Representative Edelson.
Aye.
Edelson, aye. Representative Frederick.
Aye.
Frederick, aye. Representative Greenman, excused. Representative Nelson.
Aye.
Nelson, aye. Representative Poston.
Aye.
Poston, aye. Representative Raleigh.
Raleigh, aye.
Raleigh, aye. Representative Sundin.
Aye.
Sundin, aye. There are 12 ayes, 0 nays.
There being 12 ayes and 0 nays, the motion passes and the bill is on its way. Handing it back to Representative Eklund, Chair.
Thank you, Vice Chair Zhang. Members and staff, our next meeting is tomorrow, March 10th, 2021, and we are scheduling another committee hearing for, I believe, 10:30 on Friday morning. Does anybody have any questions or comments? Well, we're getting off a few minutes early. Representative Raleigh?
Yes, thank you, Chair. Sorry about that. I was going to raise the hand, but I thought you were about to recess, and I wanted to get in beforehand. I want to make sure I understand it's going to be Friday at 10:30?
That is correct, Representative Raleigh.
All right. I've got a public safety finance at the same time. Do you have advice for me, Mr. Chair?
Yeah. Representative Raleigh getting real good at Zoom and moving back and forth because Chair Nelson is also it will be chairing that. Did you say state government finance, Representative Raleigh?
Mr. Chair, no, it's public safety finance.
Okay, it sounds like we have lots of committees going on, so we're going to have to be flexible, bounce around. I ask for your patience. It is deadline week, and for those that have been around for a little while, sometimes the craziness happens, especially on first deadline week. Hopefully second deadline isn't quite as bad. So just be flexible with your Zoom finger, I guess, Representative Raleigh.
Semper Gumby, Mr. Chair. I appreciate it.
Any other questions from members? Well, members, we're getting off a little bit early today. Get out and enjoy the nice weather, and we'll see you tomorrow. We are adjourned.